with the imminent arrival of the asteroid Apophis headed toward Earth as we speak. Could this signify the return of the ancient false god by the very same name? What will this mean for humanity's last stand as we brace for possible head-on collision with what some believe to be biblical wormwood? Watch this.
Hidden deep within ancient scriptures, it is written that in the beginning, the ultimate agent of chaos was already restrained by the Creator. As creation flourished, this force of destruction remained subdued, waiting for his time of freedom. Humanity kept record of this malevolent spirit in order to warn future generations. These ancient prophecies foretell a messenger will precede the release of the great evil, known to the Hebrews as Leviathan, but to the Egyptians as Apophis.
Welcome back to Skywatch TV. Today we continue our special investigative series on the new groundbreaking documentary film by Josh Peck called Ragnarok, Humanity's Last Stand. If you've been a viewer of Skywatch TV for any length of time, you're likely familiar with the concept of the existence of false gods in the Bible and of the ancient prophecies of their return upon the earth. However, many may not know that the coming asteroid Apophis could bring with it one of these long-forgotten fallen gods as an agent of judgment upon an unbelieving world. We're going to discuss this shortly, but before we do, watch this.
The Greek for wormwood translates the word bitter to a poison. And so, of course, we see this with the judgment of wormwood, that it poisons the water eventually to death and killing people and animals.
I believe that wormwood is an asteroid, a meteorite, that is infused with something that's water soluble. Unlike iron nickel meteorites that last for thousands of years once they hit the ground, this thing dissolves, apparently. I have no trouble believing that, and that it is a concentrated poison of some sort.
If Apophis turns out to be biblical wormwood, as I believe it will collide with Earth in the middle of the Great Tribulation period, generally around the same moment in dispensational history as when the mark of the beast arrives. As I believe Apophis is carrying what I would call an Andromeda strain-like alien microbe, I suggest it has a hitchhiker virus living off of it that on impact with our terra firma is going to be jettisoned into the atmosphere and rain down a global contagion that will make COVID-19 look like a day at the park. The Andromeda strain is a 1969 techno-thriller novel by Michael Crichton documenting the efforts of a team of scientists investigating the outbreak of a deadly extraterrestrial microorganism in Arizona. A team from an Air Force base is deployed to recover a military satellite which has returned to Earth, but contact is lost abruptly. Aerial surveillance reveals that everyone in Piedmont, Arizona, the town closest to where the satellite landed, has apparently died. The duty officer of the base tasked with retrieving the satellite suspects that it returned with an extraterrestrial contaminant and recommends activating wildfire, which in the book is a protocol for a government-sponsored team of scientists intended to contain threats of this nature. The wildlife team, led by Dr. Jeremy Stone, believes the satellite intentionally designed to capture upper atmosphere microorganisms for bioweapon exploitation, did in fact return with a deadly microorganism that kills through nearly instantaneous blood clotting. Though fiction, Crichton was lauded at the time by scientists who appreciated his attention to detail about the ability of extraterrestrial microbes, or extremophiles, to live in harsh environments like space, where temperatures range from hundreds of degrees Fahrenheit to hundreds of degrees below zero. An extremophilic alien bacteria would not only survive such an environment, but an entire field of astrobiology called panspermia exists to explain how Earth may have been host to such intergalactic life forms in the distant past. Might such an Andromeda strain on Apophis be the trigger that results in a global pandemic that leads to a mandatory universal vaccine, the mark of the beast? This is an important question because some years ago, my wife Nita brought up a point we had never considered before then. Nita asked if the biblical mark of the beast might be a conspiracy employing specific implantable health technology only now available. Her theory was gripping. In her narrative, instead of a virus from an asteroid, she suggested an occult elite operating behind the U.S. government might devise a virus that is a crossover between human and animal disease and intentionally releases it into the public. A pandemic ensues, and the period between when a person contracts the virus and death is something like 10 days. With tens of millions dead in a few weeks and the rate of death increasing hourly around the globe, a universal cry for a cure goes out. Seemingly miraculously, the government then steps forward with a vaccine. The only catch, the government explains, is that given the nature of the animal-human flu, the cure uses animal DNA and nanobots to rewrite one's genetics so that the person is no longer entirely human. The point made by Nita was that those who receive this antidote would become part beast, if you will, and perhaps therefore the title Mark of the Beast. No longer entirely human, but also mean, according to their original outline, that the individual could no longer be saved or go to heaven, explaining why the book of Revelation says that whosoever receiveth the mark is damned forever, while also explaining why the ancient Nephilim, whose DNA was part human and part angel and or animal, could not be redeemed. Now, for believers, they would know this is the mark of the beast, as we believe the Spirit of God would confirm it in their conscience and spirit. If they take this cure, they will know at the moment they have willfully submitted to damnation, regardless of how it is justified.
You look at the mark of the beast and the fact that the mark obviously has the ability to buy and sell from a mark or a device that's placed into your hand or forehead. Clearly now today, we have the technology through RFID, through the internet, through Wi-Fi, where that can be a reality. So again, It's only in the last several years that these things are that are very important details of Revelation are even achievable. So when I look at that, that tells me we are really close to this being fulfilled.
The asteroid called Apophis by NASA is certainly a physical object. Identifying it as Wormwood, as Tom Horn has suggested, is certainly a possibility. This will come closer to the Earth than anything its size in recorded memory. But it's also possible that we're looking at a supernatural entity here. When we compared the descriptions of the effects of the second and third trumpets in the book of Revelation with the way angels are described in other Jewish literature, specifically the book of Enoch, which was written a couple hundred years at least before the birth of Jesus Christ. Enoch is taken in this book into the netherworld to see a series of very disturbing sights. And he sees in a couple of locations what appear to be burning mountains. And when he asks his angelic guide, what are these? He said, these are the angels who disobeyed. These are the angels who do not come out at their appointed times, or stars who did not come out at their appointed times. Stars being a term used in the Old Testament quite frequently to represent angels. So in that context, I think we're looking at these entities perhaps being both the burning mountain of the second trumpet and Wormwood of the third trumpet, being supernatural entities as well. So I think we're looking at a yes to both. Yes, Wormwood is a physical object. Yes, Wormwood is a supernatural entity.
In addition to details about the asteroid Apophis, its name draws some attention because the cosmic mass was named after the Egyptian god of chaos, ironically also known as the Great Serpent, who, since he was also the enemy of the sun god Ra or Light, existed in darkness. He is said by the Ancient History Encyclopedia to be, quote, associated with earthquakes, thunder, darkness, storms, and death, end quote. Considering the name from a point of irony, one could consider the reference to a great serpent who dwells in darkness as almost being a personified evil. Furthermore, if it strikes the earth, chaos of the utmost kind is certainly going to ensue.
Revelation is known for its plagues, unspeakable plagues. And in fact, the whole sermons have been devoted to the plagues. And the plagues are God's simple reply to the disobedient.
What I see there is what I refer to as quantum repetition, that the events of the Old Testament, of antiquity, particularly the Exodus among them, will repeat throughout time and culminate in the Great Tribulation. If you look at some of the parallels between the Exodus and the Great Tribulation, they are numerous. First of all, you have Pharaoh, who is a foreshadow of the Antichrist. He's a persecutor of Israel. He's a pagan. He's seeking to actually eradicate Israel, which the Antichrist ultimately will try to do. And then the way he's judged, the judgment's also parallel. You have the waters turning to blood in the Exodus. You see that in the Great Tribulation. You have locusts who plague the Egyptian Empire. You have locusts who are released from the abyss at the fifth trumpet of Revelation chapter 9. There are sores that go on everyone who takes the mark of the beast. You see the boils appear on the skin of the Egyptians throughout the book of Exodus. So I see the idea of wormwood being a curse is just, again, another emphasis of the curse that you see put on the Egyptians. And how is Pharaoh brought to his knees? By the death of his firstborn son. And the culmination of the book of Revelation, the judgments of God, will be the death of the Antichrist, the son of Satan, at Armageddon.
One of the interesting things about the plagues that are recorded in the book of Exodus is that the gods of Egypt at that point were not Egyptian gods. That period of history called the Egyptian sojourn, the time when the Israelites were in Egypt, was a period known to scholars as the Second Intermediate Period, when Egypt and the Nile Delta, northern Egypt, or what they call Lower Egypt, was under the control of Semitic-speaking people called the Hyksos, which is kind of a mangling of an Egyptian phrase that means rulers of foreign lands. The Hyksos were Amorites. They were the neighbors of the Hebrews from the time of Abraham down through the time of David, essentially. And they essentially established the milieu, if you will, of the ancient Near East, the religious and the cultural setting that was still in place when Jesus rode a donkey into Jerusalem. The plagues that afflicted Egypt, there have been some Bible scholars who've attempted to connect those to specific Egyptian gods. But again, the gods of Egypt during that period were Semitic. Specifically, a biblical scholar by the name of Dr. Douglas Petrovich wrote a convincing scholarly paper several years ago identifying the Pharaoh of the Exodus as Amenhotep II. This is important because Amenhotep II adopted as his own personal protector deity the Semitic god Reshef. Reshef was a plague god. He was depicted as an archer who spread disease through his arrows, but he could also protect from plague the same way. He was also considered the special protector of charioteers and chariot warriors, the reason being chariots were considered the vehicle that transported the dead or the souls of the dead to the netherworld. In addition to being god of plagues, Reshef was considered the gatekeeper to the underworld. So the plagues that God, Yahweh, sent to free his people, I don't think were specifically related to individual Egyptian deities, but directed specifically at this one entity, Reshef, who was known later to the Greeks and Romans as Apollo. Not only did God send a series of plagues that Reshef was unable to prevent, he then sealed his message, if you will, by destroying the chariot corps of the Pharaoh, and did it by parting the Red Sea, which was also a message to the chief god of the Amorite pantheon, Baal or Baal, who became the king of their pantheon by defeating the god of the sea, Yam, in hand-to-hand combat. And if you remember in Exodus 14, it happened directly in front of a location called Baal Zephon, which is a reference to Mount Zephon, the mountain on which Baal's palace was located. So in one stroke, the God of the Hebrews, the God of the Bible, absolutely destroyed the people who had been oppressing his people by humiliating the chief god of the Amorites, the chief god of their pantheon, and the personal protector god of the Pharaoh of the Exodus, Amenhotep II.
We're in studio today with the producers of the highly anticipated new documentary, Ragnarok. But before we discuss the film, we want to show you how you can get your copy of this groundbreaking documentary right now.
There exists an ancient prophecy about a great burning mountain that falls from the sky, bringing devastation to the world. And the signs of its coming have now appeared. Skywatch TV is proud to present the Ragnarok Blockbuster Bundle. When you order Josh Peck's new documentary film, Ragnarok, Humanity's Last Stand from the Skywatch TV store, you'll also receive the never-before-seen exclusive DVD content, Ragnarok, Destruction Unveiled, and Ragnarok, Mountains of Judgment. In the new documentary film, Ragnarok, Humanity's Last Stand, visionary filmmaker Josh Peck takes you on a journey through the ancient prophecy from the Book of Revelation about a burning mountain that falls from the sky, bringing devastation to the world, and what scientists and NASA have to say about it. In this explosive documentary film, you will learn how the Wormwood prophecy connects to our modern age, whether the coming asteroid Apophis could be the harbinger of destruction, the science, history, and prophecies surrounding asteroid impact, Dr. Thomas Horn's full end times vision of destruction, what NASA is saying about Apophis, and what we can do about this threat. You'll
You'll also receive the behind-the-scenes interview, Ragnarok, Destruction Unveiled, where Skywatch TV's own Drew Graffia sits down with visionary filmmaker Josh Peck to talk about his filmmaking process. What goes into a project of this magnitude? What his initial reaction to Dr. Thomas Oren's End Times vision was? And what it is like to handle such apocalyptic material? But that's not all. We're also including the never-before-seen content entitled Ragnarok, Mountains of Judgment, where you will take a deep dive into the prophecy and science behind asteroids and how this relates to the coming space rock named after the Egyptian god of chaos, Apophis. Sold separately, these items hold a retail value of over $75. Yours now for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling. So uncover the prophecies of destruction and learn the mysteries of the last days. This collection is available only through Skywatch TV. So don't delay. The Ragnarok Blockbuster Bundle. Available now at SkywatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
The film is called Ragnarok, Humanity's Last Stand, and we are joined by the director Josh Peck, producer Tom Horn, and Skywatch TV's very own Drew Graffia. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Joe.
Tom, I want to get started right away. The film Ragnarok explores the idea that Wormwood could actually be an angel. Why do you believe it's a possibility that it is both an angel and an asteroid?
It's very interesting because if you look at the language, you know, Donna Howell is part of our ministry and she's always telling us, you know, you got to be faithful to the original languages, to the exegesis, to what was the original intent of what is being spoken and said. However, throughout ancient history, asteroids were considered to be messengers of the gods. That's why the second book is called The Messenger. And the ancient god Apollo that is connected to all of this was also known by an ancient name that meant that he is that when that asteroid comes through the space, that's Apollo being a herald or an evil omen of things that are to come. But when I asked our friend Dr. Michael Heiser one day about this, I said, where do you come down on this? Do you believe that it is an asteroid? Mm-hmm. It is, by the way, when it says a star fell from heaven, it is the Greek asteroid. Mm-hmm. So the language is pretty clear on that. But what he said was, well, if you were to go back to the earliest church fathers and ask that question, almost all of them would have came entirely down to say it's an angel. It is an agent, an intelligent agent that is a messenger from God, not necessarily even an evil angel or a fallen angel, but a messenger from God that is executing a particular thing on planet Earth. So now you go back to Revelation 8, and it's talking about this star falls from heaven, burning like a mountain, and it impacts the waters. Well, it seems to be a physical object, doesn't it? It's described like a giant mountain burning with fire that falls down out of the heavens. To me, that is an asteroid.
Yeah.
But if you go into Revelation 9, it says something interesting that could be clarifying. It says, and a star fell from heaven. And then it says this, and unto him was given the key to the bottomless pit. So it's an asteroid, but it seems to be like a delivery vehicle, if you will, something that is under the guidance of a supernatural entity for a particular purpose. So this fits perfectly with ancient theology. Heiser's not the only one. I'm not exactly sure what Donna Howell thinks, but we talked to several other theologians who said they believe that it could be an angel. Others say it could be a big stone that's going to fall out of space, or it could be both. And that's where I come down, that it is both. In fact, Derek Gilbert is also in the documentary film. He, too, believes that we're actually talking about both. So what am I saying? I'm saying that Apophis is a rock that is racing towards Earth, probably under the supernatural guidance of an entity, either a fallen angel or an unfallen one.
And doesn't that make sense? Isn't that so consistent with Revelation? Because when God's pouring out his judgments on the earth, he does it through the angels. Mm-hmm. So the angels are carrying these judgments. It makes perfect sense that the Wormwood prophecy would be the same.
And I'll tell you another thing. You know, in the film, we examine the fact that Apophis and this is purely speculation on my part, but there are reasons why I came to believe that Apophis is carrying a deadly microorganism. And we do know, by the way, there was a science paper recently put out talking about space threats that could bring the next coronavirus on steroids, because extremophiles, microorganisms, alien microorganisms, could be carrying with them a contagion for which we would have no immunity whatsoever on planet Earth.
No understanding of it.
And no understanding of it. It's kind of like the famous Michael Crichton book, The Andromeda Strain, where they capture an alien microorganism from outer space, bring it to Earth, and then everybody in Piedmont, Arizona is dead overnight as a result of it. Now, in the film, we go into why I believe that is going to happen. And then the bigger question of, when does it happen? It's the middle of the Great Tribulation period, according to Bible prophecy scholars, because that is when the trumpets and bowls and so on begin pouring out upon the earth. So they're going to have to get the film if they want to understand all of the logic behind
right.
it. But I believe Apophis is bringing an alien microorganism with it that is going to be connected to why the Mark of the Beast seems to unfold right around the same time that this asteroid impacts the Earth. Because, as you know, my theory is that it's going to be a contagion, a virus, a coronavirus on steroids during the middle of the Great Tribulation period, for which the Earth cries out for a cure.
Right.
And then the whole world lines up to become vaccinated. And we have, of course, seen a clear pattern
right.
for how quickly a contagion could give rise to autocratic imperialism, in which they're going to mandate that everybody on Earth be vaccinated or receive the mark of the beast.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we're all out of time, but don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to come back next week and continue this conversation for everybody on panel. Tom, Josh, Drew, thanks again, gentlemen, for joining us. Keep your eyes on the prize, which is Jesus Christ. We'll be back.
Now, your last book was The Lost Prophecies of Qumran.
Yes.
About the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Essenes. Now, what is it like going from a book to a documentary? What are the differences between the two projects?
Oh, man, night and day. Writing a book is totally different than doing a movie. I enjoy both, but documentaries for me is where it's at. So writing a book, you're doing all the research, you're writing everything. Like for my documentaries, I don't write scripts or anything. Like it's not all scripted out. Some of it is like little parts here and there, but I'll actually ask people questions and then take their natural answers. I don't write people scripts. Sometimes some guests choose to write their answers ahead of time and they'll do that. But in making movies, there's not really a whole lot of writing. It's more kind of crafting a narrative that will take the viewer on a journey.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not only, you're doing less writing, but you're doing a lot more thinking about audio, visual, that kind of stuff. So for me, documentary stuff, I actually love doing an interview like this because this is all stuff I am qualified to talk about. It's the behind the scenes, how it was made. The movie is based around Tom's research. So, you know, of course I'm going to have to do interviews about the topic as well. And I'm well versed in it enough, but it's Tom's research. So it's harder for me to talk about it in that way. Where if it's my own book, I did the research, it's all in my head, I already know everything. When you're editing, and you know this, you're not always listening exactly to the content, you're more listening for like audio problems or finding out where the next cut should be, and so you're not absorbing the information as much. Also, for me, writing a book takes a lot longer. Doing movies seems to go by faster, so yeah, totally different deal, but both a lot of fun.